Welcome again, of course, to Miracles. Well, you remember the page one of this book? And it says, nothing real can be threatened. And nothing unreal exists. And herein lies the peace of God. As if to say, if you're vulnerable, you're an ego. And you're in a dream of separation. If some part of you can be hurt in your mind, if fear has arisen, it means you think you can lose something valuable. So you're vulnerable. You're an ego. You're asleep. You're separate. It's kind of binary that way. Nothing real can be threatened, he says. It's a great definition right there of truth, reality. So what we do, we come here to this room, try to bust the ego. We try to bust the ego, different ways to come at it and catch it. Catch the way the ego has a hold on your conscious identity. What do you think you are? Course says that it's you're so deep asleep that you've even forgotten what you are. You don't even know you're an extension of God. Of truth. You don't even know that. You think you are this body, or if you're not the body, you're some separate thing that's hoping to get back to oneness someday, somehow. We're here to bust the ego. The ego is the belief in a thought system that says you're separate. Even if you've gone beyond this body thing, and you say, I know, I've done enough spiritual work that I recognize that the body is just this shell over my spirit. You say, I'm not a body having a spiritual experience. I'm a spirit having a body experience. Maybe you've even gone that far. Yeah. Great. But still, there is a stench of you not being connected to the whole. You're still in the separate nightmare. And we're here to bust that. No matter what, if you've still got this sense of it's me against, or something can affect me from the outside, or time and space are real, or I'm stuck here, any of these things are still occurring to you, the ego's got a hold on you, and that's why we meet. It's what's underneath your ability to not be supremely happy. This idea that it's you versus anything or everything else, that simple, essential principle, it's what's behind your ability to be unhappy at all. Because, after all, nothing real can be threatened.
Go on.
It's happy, it's free, it's powerful, it is completely satisfied with its ability to play and explore and be a child of God. It can't be threatened. So if you feel threatened at all, you know who you are if you do. I know who you are. You feel threatened at all. You're still taking the drug of the ego. Welcome to Egos Anonymous. We're here to bust that thought system. And it does go beyond your body. For example, if you think you commit suicide and then you suddenly get to heaven, well, no. According to this book, your body is a dream. It's an effective dream so you can be separate. And all your thought system that comes along with the body is in your mind, not in your brain. You think you kill the brain, you get freedom. Core says, unless you choose it, because you're not a body. In fact, you're free. You're still as God created you, no matter what you think about yourself. And you may think about yourself as having to have a body in order to be free. Well, you're going to get another body. Nothing will be kept from you. Even your sick dreams of being in a body only. It won't be kept from you. Why would it be? I mean, why? It's not hurting anything. You can play in a body as long as many times as you wish. Why not? There's no limit. You're a creator, son. Therefore, you create. And it never goes wrong. It's always what you wanted. Always. Now, as the Course says, on page 101, paragraph 6, it says, and I'll quote for you, it says, you are a child of God. Hama. A priceless part of His kingdom. Only this is true. Only this is real. Period. Then, you have made a sleep with your creative power, right? What did you do with it? You made a sleep. You guys are pitching. This is going to go by so fast. Try to slow it down a little bit. Okay? So, there is the truth. Everything that is. It says, you are an extension of God, a child of God. That means that you're made up of God. Mm-hmm. Every ounce of you, everything, is made up of what you came from, your source. We just call it God for convenience.
Yeah, which is the whole universe.
So. Whole everything. Yeah, the universe, and then it made the universe, yeah. And what's thinking about making the universe, or thinks about the universe it made. Mm-hmm. Everything. We just call that God. Just call it God. For convenience. For convenience. Okay, because that's beyond what can be taught. So here you are, the child. Now, as you are an extension of Source, which is infinite and eternal, you can do anything it wants. Here's what you did. You little impetuous child you, creator you, you came up with something that is a sleep. You came up with a sleep. Isn't that interesting? What's a sleep? A sleep is where you close off your consciousness of anything else that's happening, real. It's kind of like a rest, but it's a disconnection from what was before, from the truth of what was before, as a sleep. And then, clever you, always out for a good time, you, from your sleep, you made, right? You made this. Then, you made dreams in the sleep that you made. You made that with your power. I was having fun. I made a sleep. And the dreams are infinite. Wow, you can bend all sorts, make up set of rules, bend them, grow some wings, fly. I was flying, and I almost hit in a dream, and I had to look out for the power wires. Whoa, look out. I didn't even see that one. It was so exciting. Did that. Then what happened in your variety of expression of this power and experiencing of dreams, you ended up having what can only be called nightmares. Welcome to Earth, into your personal life. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It gets hungry, it gets tired, it goes to somebody that it professes to love, and it says exactly the wrong thing at exactly the right time.
Constantly.
That's hell. Welcome to hell.
Yep.
Right? Because all you meant to do is be loving and to be kind. And yet it went backwards. Or you fed your body everything right, you exercised it reasonably, you know, as much as anybody, and you got sick anyway. Why me? Welcome to hell. Welcome to nightmares. Well, the ego is the thought system that allows you to forget this even exists. And to forget you made that. In fact, you better forget what you really are, being an extension of Source. That's not really helpful, because you might think about Source too much and gig is up. If you think about love too much, war doesn't work out so well. It just loses its energy, and before you know it, you're hugging, and there goes the war. So this is unremembering, right? You're denying. You have to deny the truth to get you all the way down to your, so your nightmares can feel real. You got to really be asleep to have a good flying dream. I had to be really asleep. It was great. I mean, it was very exciting. So that's what's going on. Big picture, right? That's what's going on. We're maintaining that nightmare level with our thought system. We're here in this room with this book. It's the cleverest way I've seen anywhere to undo the thought system that holds the nightmares in place as being real, as being a victim to that. It will also lead you all the way up that stack back to truth. Tonight, we're going to work on yet another aspect, another brick in the wall, another thing, method, thought, part of the thought system that the ego uses to hold you in nightmares, to hold you in separated thinking. It seems like such a good idea at the time, but as all things ego are, they backfire.
Well, it's a clever device to undermine your spiritual advancement.
Couldn't say it better. That's it. Clever device to undermine your spiritual advancement. And it's this. Secrets. Tonight, it's secrets. For the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's been idols. Didn't we have a good time with that? Now it's secrets.
Better fun with that one, huh?
I'll have fun with secrets. So for the next couple of minutes, I would like you to check out what is a secret. What's going on with that? What is a secret? Why do you keep a secret? If you decide that there's something in your life, oh, I better keep this a secret. I'm not going to tell. What does that feel like? Can you go there? What does that feel like when you decide, this is the secret? So, David, fill us in on some of the rationale for keeping that secret.
Well, secrets, you know, are kind of neat things that you're severely afraid of. You have this fear factor going on, you don't want nobody to know about, you know. And that's how the really deep ones are, you know. And just those are things that I look as things you need to let go of. You know, Let that inner vision guide you. You know, just all kinds of stuff that, you know, if you brought it out, maybe some are you're not ready for.
Keep it disconnected from your present life.
Yeah.
And it won't mess up your present life. Keep that secret separate.
Yep.
So that it doesn't hurt what you got going now.
Yeah, all the... When I started getting into this stuff, it's like we had all kinds of secrets out there.
Yeah.
And now, it's like, I have to go look for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting harder to find, and once you find them, you just let it out.
Yeah.
Now secrets are... Now I might have...
If it's even still real!
Yeah.
To the ego, all this stuff is...
Oh yeah, it's all ego.
Horribly real.
Yeah, just tons of it.
Right. So now, so you don't get hurt. You keep a secret so it doesn't...
Now I'm finding that then I start learning all this cool stuff and I'm going to tell everybody about it and you realize, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then you learn there's a few things you got to keep quiet, not tell people if you're going to... Because it can piss people off and not ready for something. Mm-hmm. It's just you trying to, you know, force it on somebody you don't. So now the secrets all kind of change. There's actually some that you just don't let go yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just, it's kind of what the book's telling us to do. Go find all these secrets you have and dump them, undo them, and tone them.
Mark.
Yeah. The definition.
Why are you keeping your secret?
Yeah. Usually because it's something I'm ashamed of or feel guilty about.
Feel guilty about it.
Yeah. And so I don't want the person to know because it's like something that I, you know, like I won't be able, it'll be hard for me to deal with their reaction.
Yeah.
And it'll like cut to my core somehow.
Yeah. And you can't undo the past.
Right.
And it seems to reflect that you could have that in your past and they'll think you have it now, but... You think you don't, and it's just messy.
Yeah.
Especially the deep, dark variety of secrets.
Especially the deep, dark ones. That you know, rather not have ever done.
Anyway. Yeah, no, I'm not going to share.
I'm not going to share that.
He told it? I missed it.
No, that's right. That's right.
And secrets, it's all in relationship to other people. Secret.
Could affect relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenny, what's the reason why you keep that secret? I'm not saying you keep it specifically from Bridget, but maybe it is.
I was really young.
Yeah. Don't tell us the secret.
Don't tell us.
I learned language.
Okay.
So I had a holy instant.
Yeah.
And then I was told it was shameful. So there I learned how to shame myself.
What kind of holy incident are you talking about?
I'll share later.
Fair enough. Maybe I want to know. But
you called it language?
Pardon?
Oh, language. Yeah. Right. All right.
So my dad said, you know, hey, bad kid.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Shame.
So I now know how to shame myself.
Yes.
Didn't need his help anymore.
Yes.
That's a good point. Yeah, that kind of touches on, I have like some memories, I don't know from where, but saying something to some authority figure and have them be like really angry or upset at me.
Yes.
And feeling like not knowing why.
Yes.
And then just like you learn from that. Like you learn from those moments to just be quiet or to not say those things. And
or maybe what Kenny is saying, that having been shamed by an authority figure means he's shameful. And if you would now, at least in that person's eyes, be less than. Could be.
Yeah.
It's somehow forever set that if you could do that then, you're doing other stuff ever since then because you were capable of using bad words as a kid. What else are you capable of doing? You little beep, says that authority figure. So that's a secret you keep from yourself because it's just an ugly thought. It's a burdensome, heavy stain that when we revisit it, comes real again.
Yeah.
It was gone for months, maybe years until I brought it up.
I'm making progress.
How could you do that to Kenny anyway?
God. I'm going to have to go get a drink from my favorite therapist, the bartender. That's right. Abusive. Very abusive that way. Yeah. Very abusive. Self-abusive.
Mm. Yeah.
And you could avoid that heel chasing cycle by keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
And not bringing it up. Yeah. Sorry.
You have that authority when you look back very young, that you, there's some authority always says something to you, and all of a sudden you feel bad, you're guilty.
Yeah.
Before that, you were not.
Uh-huh.
I look back, realize, you know, I was never guilty before any of that. Them saying I was and me believing that created it. And you look back, you realize you never were. You were, the innocence was always there.
Yes. Yes.
And the way it was told, it just made you like,
oh, so much power was given that authority figure. Which, by the way, in our healed mind, we know is just another ego.
Yeah.
In the dream of egos. Another character in your dream, which makes a really good nightmare. If you've got a character in the dream that can tell you you're bad. But wait, if we could just go up one level and see that you're the dreamer of the dream, they're all the same.
I love the fact that the book says we are still innocent.
Yes.
We didn't lose it. How could we?
We didn't. Mm-hmm. Didn't lose your innocence. Mm-hmm. You are the love that you seek. You forgot it. Mm-hmm. Well, what's a good reason to keep secret? What's a justification that you might have to keep that secret of yours?
Preserve my image.
Preserve your image.
Mm.
Yes.
Preserve my persona.
Yes, your persona, your image, your self-esteem, your picture that you present to the world and to yourself, your definition of yourself as you'd like to be known, could be damaged were this advertised, this secret.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It was such an epiphany when the woman sitting next to me on Sunday said, what we're afraid of is losing the idol of who we are.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, of course that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, it was part of it. I found another one since we did that little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that we were studying is the, it came up, you know, we were studying it 2 weeks ago, and it came up during Sunday, and it's this interesting sentence from A Course in Miracles, which is, your fear of God is the loss of idols. And the previous paragraph says, your image of yourself is an idol. Just as you said.
The most important one we have.
Oh, it's the one that really counts.
Yeah.
What you think you are. Protecting that, preserving that, the face that you put out, sure.
So what does that mean, that if you your fear of God is the loss of idols, that if you fully embrace God, then you'd have to give up all of your possessions, your thoughts about yourself, and your all the stuff that you identify with your ego, and all of the stuff that makes you let you use to identify your reality, basically. So if you have all this stuff and you want to keep it,
yep.
But then the thought of, well, I have to, or there's a fear of giving that up in order to get something else. But you don't. It's a paradox.
You don't know what's better.
Yeah, you don't know what's better.
All you know is what you got is what you got.
Yeah.
So it's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best because it's the one you got.
You can identify with it.
You identify with it. You rely on it. You know how it works. Even if it's sometimes it doesn't quite perform like you wish, but still it's what you got.
Yeah.
Which you might see that as the plight of an alcoholic who's got their favorite bottle or whatever, or the drug addict who can, once they get the money together, they can get some peace. Lasts for about a day and a half. I don't know where I'm going to wake up, but I'm going in and it's great. They trust it, so they do it.
Yeah.
And it's all they got, so it is the best. You choose your certain, if you're an alcoholic, you choose a certain type of alcohol. And it's funny, I don't understand all this stuff, but apparently it's very different to be a, you know, gin or something versus wine. It's a different experience. And when you become an alcoholic, you find out that it's that gin, that's what does it for me. And that's how you sail off into oblivion to forget your problems. Because you trust it, and then it remains this crutch that continues to slowly dissolve your life. Well, the ego has got its flavors. Maybe you're not a big rageaholic like somebody else. That's their drink, their ego of choice. You're maybe the passive-aggressive type. You're the one who says, oh, nothing's wrong. Don't worry about me. Nothing's wrong. Oh, no, I'm happy. I'll just get along. Meanwhile, you're seething inside. Deep hatred. A little stench of murder comes up. Oh, I would never kill anybody.
I'd sure like them gone.
But I'd like them gone forever. They would deserve it. I wouldn't shed a tear. Of course, the dress is all of these. They're trusted because they work. You think they work. But if you back up just one little bit and look at your life, you'll see you've got a personal private hell going on. You've developed, with all these defenses and these idols, you've developed a prison. And each idol is a bar in your prison cell. And the idol is how to be the perfect mother, perfect wife, perfect son, employee, employer, all of these pictures of these images that you rely on. Of course, right? How could you live otherwise, you say? These are all idols that have to be a certain way. But the problem is, as soon as you make a judgment about something has to be, it loses its life. It becomes a wooden thing on the shelf that you bow down to, versus a living source of information that's alive. And it would change as you change, you change as it changes, if it were alive. You see what I mean? That's the whole discussion we had in idols for a couple of weeks. That you make your mind up about something and boop, brick in the wall. Of course, calls them veils and shadow figures that seem impenetrable, but were you to just push on the veil, you'd see, well, it's nothing there. It's blocking all the light, it's huge, but there's nothing there.
Merely assumptions.
Yes.
Help you order your belief system.
And then they become faith, and then you start to think, well, that is the truth. These are idols we talked about for the last couple of weeks. Yes. Yes. And they build up a whole image. And you would want to keep secrets about some of these shadow figures, because they would change your idea of you as well as what other people thought of you. Sure. Yeah. Bridget, what is a good reason for keeping that secret?
If you tell a secret to somebody, then they always use it. It could be used against you.
You tell them the secret, and then
you
because
trust
it's
them.
What?
You trust them.
You trust them with it. I mean, you kind of bare your soul.
It's your first mistake.
And then they can take that information, which you can't do anything about, but it's true, and now they can use it to leverage on you, hit you over the head, embarrass you, like a judgment. Who knows what they could do with it? You know what? You should just keep that quiet. Leave it in the past. It's over.
Too much information.
Yeah.
They don't need to know. Just for me, just for fun. Never tell anyone.
Yeah.
I've heard that one before.
That's good.
And it is. There is something there that you don't have to tell every little thing.
Especially if it's not true anymore.
Right.
Now it would be a lie to tell someone, wouldn't it? It would be a lie. They would assume that you're still that same way.
Yes. Yes.
But you're not. In fact, you've been completely reborn.
Yes, another lifetime ago even. Like when you do something as a kid.
Yes. As a kid wants to experiment with language.
Do something.
Not even sure what that means, but it sure sounds good when you put a punch on the end of it.
Yeah.
And your father used it, so it must be okay.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's a lie.
That is a lie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you tell me. But this is what happened. If you explained to him, this is what happened before. It's not true now, but this is what happened before.
And of course they're going to leave you.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Sure. You
now
never.
They put you in that box.
You who did that and just admitted it, would never do it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Right.
But you know, before course, you don't recognize the power of your mind to heal. So you don't know you wouldn't do it again. Without some kind of a awakening, you wouldn't know you weren't still that person. Which is why Kenny has come so far. He's not held to what that child ever did. That child's dead. Cute little thing, but it's gone. Reborn in its place is the man. Every moment. Yeah. Yeah. Luann, what's the reason for keeping that secret?
I went through a process during the meditation part. I got to a lot of what everybody said in terms of basically starting with fear and then realizing my fear is based on shame.
Mm-hmm.
But what started off was thinking my biggest secret is something I can't admit to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if I admitted to it,
yes.
Then if I admitted to it, then I would have to own it.
Uh-huh.
And if I owned it, then I'd have to be afraid of owning it, whatever it would cost.
Whatever it cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the biggest fear then is to admit that I want to be the child of God, but I'm not, and I'm afraid I never will be.
And that if this secret were known, it'd be held against you.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't be permitted to be a child of God somehow.
That's right.
Shame.
It's about shame, basically.
Yeah. You know, Course in Miracles says there's no sin. That's one of the vectors of the Course that you have to understand.
Mm-hmm.
This whole concept that you could do something wrong that was unforgivable. This is very important. That you could actually do something unforgivable. Sin. A separation event that God would say, well, you stay out of heaven. The rest of you can come through, but not. What did you do? No! Now, that, the Course says, come on. The Course says, you are an extension of God, a perfect creation. That's all that's true. And if you're wondering what happened, in your creativity, you made a sleep where you could then forget that you're a perfect child of God. And all that is true.
Yeah,
and then
with me, that is the biggest sin, is that I forgot.
That you forgot. But then, he says, but you forgot on purpose. It's not bad, it's experimenting. You can't actually change the truth of what you are. You're me, God says. I know what you are. You can only be from what you were made.
But what about a psychopath?
Same as psychopath. Psychopath is living what we call a nightmare. Making it real. as best as he possibly can, and he's better at it than me. I think he's even better at it than me. That's a real nightmare. A real separation event. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then for all those observing the psychopath, real nightmare. Especially if it takes one of your loved ones. Mm-hmm. We just got layer upon layer.
It reaffirms the psychopath's view of himself.
Yes.
Which is the most important thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He wants to know that he is valid in mm-hmm. anything he does.
Yep.
And it becomes a kind of a psychosis, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. If he isn't caught, then he doesn't know the effect mm-hmm. he had.
Right.
Oh, it's sick and twisted with layers and layers, right? But as I drew on the board, these layers and layers are the ego. It's the belief in separation writ large and made to feel real. But if you just go up one layer and another layer, you will see, and that's what we do with this book, you will see the power of your mind, even now in the nightmare. That's where miracles are most effective, is when you get a shift in perception about something that really matters to you. Something that really has you threatened. When you get a shift in perception about that, boy, the gig is up. You really see the power of your mind. You really start to taste. You might actually be spirit and not this victim to whatever it is you're worried about. That's what happens, of course, eventually, through the lessons. You wake up on some of these really tough stuff in your life. But man, what a blessing. Now, what was your enemy? Was it cancer? Was it a divorce? Was it a money issue? Was it doesn't matter, because now once you use it, once you take the lesson from it, that cherished awakening, that it took that difficult thing in your life to get you to eventually come around to see the power of your own mind to choose peace, even though it's still real. It still happened. And yet, you can breathe easy today because you let it go, see? Even for only a moment. Course Miracle says you can let it go. You tried letting it go and you felt great. Even for just a moment. And maybe you picked it up again a minute later. It's not the same now, because you know you could put it down. Gig is up. It's falling apart. Your spirit. And you're on your way home.
I had that experience today.
Good.
It was wonderful.
Good.
Yeah.
This is the way up. This is why I love that term enlightenment, because you feel lighter.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what's going to happen. I just have to have faith that it's whatever it is, I can still be peaceful.
And here I go.
Yeah.
That's it, Luann.
So I bought the blinds today.
Oh, good. About time.
It's about time.
Sounds positive.
Oh my God, I've been suffering for a year.
Took that long. Could have happened any sooner.
And something about the book, and I looked up your other website.
Yep.
Right, the Willow Glen one.
Yeah.
And
yep.
At the bottom of it says, "I'm addicted to spirit." That's what you. The quote from you on.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm not spirit. I'm addicted to peace.
Peace, yes.
And I thought, yeah, that's what I've been needing and wanting for over a year, and there's only one way to get it.
Maybe. You're excellent. Excellent!
Yeah, cost me $1,000, but oh well.
And the peace has come. Just like that. Yeah. Best $1,000 you ever spent.
Very well be. Could be. We'll see.
We'll see.
If I can still have that faith that all I have to do is do it, and the Holy Spirit will take care of it for me.
That's it.
Yeah. Not necessarily change him, but change me.
That's enlightenment. If you believe in lightening up and going up. And darkenment is going down.
Into the pit.
This cost me, it's going to cost me more. I never should have done this, and they shouldn't have said what they said, and then I said what I said, and you can't take it back, and things are just going to be, I'm going to carry this burden forever. That's enlightenment.
So now I have to get rid of the thought that it took me a year to get there. Mm-hmm. There's a shame in that.
Yes, it's time for forgiveness there.
Yeah.
My bad. But you could have done it. I mean, you have to admit this, right? You couldn't have done it before you did it.
I couldn't have what?
You couldn't have bought the shades before you bought the shades. Is that true?
I bought the shades before. I couldn't, yes, you're right, I couldn't get myself to
it's
do it.
It's just true.
Yeah.
You bought the shades when you bought the shades. Mm-hmm. There wasn't some past version of you who would have bought them 6 months earlier.
That's how I can forgive myself.
Honestly, that's how you can forgive yourself. The obvious truth.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, what's your name?
Deborah.
Deborah.
Yep.
Deborah, what's the reason for keeping that secret?
This one's a little different. I get the shame and letting that go, but I'm a different person now. But one that I have a lot of trouble with, it's kind of in a different arena, is it would really hurt someone. With no place for that person to go with that information.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If they knew this secret, then they would be burdened with this information that would somehow change their life, their definition of themselves in some way. And you can't undo the past. We know you can't undo the past, right? So it is what it is. And it better leave that in the past. Better leave that in the past, because if they knew this, then they would have no choice but to see themselves a little differently, and that's what they don't know won't hurt them.
But so does that affect Deborah as keeping that secret? Because you're like the keeper of the secret between two parties.
Well, Deborah knows that that level, that type of information affects the proper owner. In other words, if somebody came out of Deborah's past and said, "Deborah, I hate to break this to you, but did you know that this and this?" I just think you should. It's true, though.
Sorry.
Deborah, by evidence here, would see this burden, and she herself might feel inclined to think less of herself some way. Because it's true, if it's true for this other person she's protecting, it's true for you. That's the real lesson we're going to get to. It's not that you would go out and tell this person, no, don't leave them alone. God, let them live in bliss. If they die not knowing, they'll be happy. Good. Good. But watch out what this class of information means to you personally. Because it has cousins. It has cousins. It has, for you in your life, where that type of information lives. Do you know everything there is to know?
Absolutely not.
Uh-oh. You're vulnerable. You're vulnerable. But on page one it says, nothing real can be threatened at all. On page one of this book. So if this type of thinking holds sway, is real, it's real for you and you don't know it. And it's weighing you down. Even if you say, but I'm sure it doesn't apply to me. But it has cousins, I said.
Yeah, that part is, I can't. Say more, because I don't understand. What
I mean is, it isn't exactly that secret you're keeping.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily that exact one apply. But there are other flavors of hell. Like, instead of a mistress, it was, a surrogate. There was an untruth in your past that your parents never told you. It's totally different what you're protecting this person from. But for you, if you were to find out that you were related to Donald Trump or to Hillary Clinton, it's like, I'm not sure I really want to live with that. I'm related to this one of these major politicians. In fact, what does it mean about my decision making? It's a cousin. It's a cousin. It's not what you're protecting this other person from, but that there's something in your past that can change what you think about yourself. Something serious. Something that was trusted. Something nobody should have to know. Something nobody should have to deal with. Happened to you. You're vulnerable. And the whole structure that keeps the dream in place, the nightmare in place, is held more real.
I'm a little lost.
Okay, let me say it this way. Okay. Let me say it this way. What you believe is true for me is true for you. Simple enough?
Say that.
What you believe is true. What you believe is essentially true for me.
For me. What I believe is true for me.
What you believe is true for Andrew. What Mark believes true for Andrew.
Why is that? That's totally confusing.
For projection.
For example, if I take drugs, I will eventually poison myself and die early. Fair enough? Do you believe that's true for me? If I take enough of the right drugs, it'll go wrong. Is that true?
Yeah.
Enough.
Find the answer.
What? You find the answer?
It's a good possibility.
It's a very good possibility that if you do enough of that, it's going to go bad for you. Okay. Right? Is that true? Right? Even water will kill you. You drink enough water, marathoners have died drinking. They said, I'll save time on the. I'll drink all the water now, and I won't have to stop late. They killed themselves drinking too much water. They diluted their blood.
So you're talking about a universal kind of a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
One shouldn't smoke cigarettes.
One shouldn't smoke cigarettes. It tends to kill you and to make your life miserable for the last 20 years. You just struggle breathing. And your teeth get stained and fall out.
No, you smoke your legs off, actually.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, one of the doctors at work would say, people smoke their legs off. Your vascular system, it doesn't get down there, and there's more leg amputations. People don't die of lung cancer. They smoke their extremities off.
Smoke their legs off. So that's true.
Chop their legs off.
So if that's true for them, it's true for me. It is true for you. Do you want to start smoking tonight? You still got time.
You make it sound so cool.
Yeah, but you do the filterless mint ones, you know? Natural. Indians smoked them that way. That's good for you.
My girlfriend tried to get me to smoke cigarettes when I was
What we're talking about is a principle of mind. It's a principle, a universal principle of mind. If you think that this information has power over that person's happiness, the same kind of information has power over your happiness and his and mine. You would feel a little sad if you and I went in the hallway and you told me the secret. And I say, oh, I know what you mean. And it's true in my family. And I can't stop thinking about it. And I'm burdened every day. It's true for you. You were right. Which is fine in the world. There's terrible things in the world, plenty of them. But when we're working with A Course in Miracles, it's not them, it's you. Your happiness is all that matters.
I'm happier not telling him.
Keep it. You must always follow one guide, and there's only one guide that you need to follow in this lifetime for your spiritual awakening, and it's peace. You only do what you think will bring you personally, and I know it sounds selfish, because it is, and it needs to be. It's the only way you could be honest enough to hear the Holy Spirit. Just follow what you think will bring you personally the most peace. Turns out, that's the way we can be guided. Holy Spirit can speak through peace, can't speak through anger, fear, guilt. There's plenty of programs in the world that will use anger, fear, and guilt as a way to guide you to work harder, learn more, share, tell the truth. Oh my God, what a disaster that can be. Of Course in Miracles says, peace. Let peace be your guide. because this will open you to the ability of the Holy Spirit. You see? All the other flavors, I could fill up 10 chalkboards with things that are not peaceful, couldn't I?
At least.
Guilt, doubt, responsibility, blah, 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 job definition, family position, oh my God, on and on forever, but they're not peaceful. Those are the language of the ego. And it made the whole world you're living in. Things that are not peaceful. Which is why A Course in Miracles, they called it, they said, what should we call ourselves? I got it. Foundation for Inner Peace. Because that is the way out. It will be your guide. So stick with that. Even if years later you decide it's more peaceful to get the truth out because there's some other, I don't know what comes up. Doesn't matter. That's when you're available to buy the shades. When you honestly think it's more peaceful for me to block this light than it is to get the person who feels like there's too much light out of my life. It goes like this. I don't know who actually said this, but it says, it's a lot harder to carpet the entire planet than to just put on a pair of slippers for yourself. You wear slippers for hell with the rest of the planet.
That's great.
It's practical. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. A lot of people feel a big burden on your heart, feeling you need to fix the world. And if you were to put on slippers just to protect yourself, what about everybody else? Aren't you being too selfish? What about everybody else who doesn't even know can't afford slippers? No, you should not wear slippers, and you should go carpet the world so that everybody's comfortable. There's a burden in people's heart, especially political and environmental, who are trying really hard this way. And what they're actually doing is a martyr, and the ego loves it. Oh, your blood will be all over that carpet if it ever does get installed. Nobody's going to want to walk on it. No, A Course in Miracles says you have one job, and that's to choose the atonement for yourself. That's how it phrases it. You know, the atonement isn't like what it says in the dictionary, but we learn that. But that's your one job.
Yeah, that's. I noticed that. That's a lot of people can't handle that part. When you say to yourself, I've been noticing that. And so you gotta, when you talk about it, you gotta kind of do it in a way that they don't get upset.
That's right. You have to use their language.
What part? Yeah.
What part?
Well, the part where it's like you're doing this for yourself to get something. You want to save the world? Fix yourself.
Yep.
Got it.
Because you won't save it otherwise. But you can't really tell a lot of people that because they got their mind made up, and you know.
And they say that if you do go volunteer your time, you'll become a better person. See, so you should go out and make the world better so that you can heal. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
From a humanity point of view.
From a humanity point of view, it's really wonderful.
That's what, in the Mormon,
yep,
where they go out on a mission for 2 years.
They really do it. They really do it. Yeah. Yes. The Course in Miracles says that may work out really well, but be careful of hiding, keeping a secret, as you go out and do all this do-gooding, or good-doing.
Do-goodery.
If you're holding a little grudge down there deep beneath, and don't worry, that grudge will be expunged out after you've helped enough people and given up enough of your life. Let's say ages maybe 22 to 24. How's that sound? 22 to 26? Give that up. No internet. No newspapers. Just service. It'll cleanse your soul. And your mom says, no, you need to do this. Your father did it. Now you're doing it. That won't have any grudges anywhere, does it?
It'll develop character.
It might, okay? Just like meditating, you go into a cave and you do Vipassana for 25 years. It might actually bring you to enlightenment.
Yeah, a lot of these other like spiritual courses and stuff, they actually have, they'll have, you know, fix yourself, just get yourself together. They have that in there, but at the same time they have going out and fixing the world, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of contradiction.
It can be counterproductive.
Yeah.
It can be. It can also be the way to your enlightenment. I'm not saying these things are wrong. I am saying the ego can use this stuff horribly. The most wonderful stuff the ego can use horribly.
You go out on a peace march.
Yes.
In anger.
That's right. You're so angry, you're going to go on a peace march.
That's a thought.
Perfectly said.
Or in my case, I'm always being asked for money by various charities, and I feel, and when I give it, then I say, okay, and then I feel like, I really don't have that much. Why am I giving away what's gonna,
yes,
I might need someday?
Your act of giving corroded your stability and made you weak. Your act to make someone else strong made you weak.
Yeah.
Weaker, weaker still, so that the next time you give, you will have proven to yourself through these thought patterns that you're now weaker still, which is the exact opposite.
I want to feel my doing it.
Yes. And the effect that you could have. Of Course in Miracles says that as you give, you receive. But it's not talking about money or pizza. The fact is, when you give pizza, you have one less piece. There's only so many pieces in that round, then they're gone, and what's left for you? No. It's the higher giving that may take the form of money or pizza. It may. It's the thought behind it that you recognize. As you give, you receive. This is the only way you can know you have.
You mean the sauce?
Don't hold back the sauce.
The secret sauce.
Don't be cheap. Don't hold back the sauce. This is the only way you can know you have things of value. Now, it's true for pizza and money too, okay? But that's not what we're actually talking about. We're talking about the much larger, more important exchanges that occur in your mind, in relationship. These exchanges are universal, and they come in form of trust. When you give trust, you prove you had trust to give. It's invisible. Now, it's true with pizza, right? You give pizza, it means you had a pizza to give. That's not bad, but it's lower thinking. It's not bad, it's good, and it's useful. If that's where your head is, go buy some pizza and give it away. But we're talking at a higher level, usually.
Consciousness.
Yes. Consciousness and spirit.
Spirit, yeah.
Did you know that when you truly trust, for example, trust or honesty, there is a spirit of trust. Mm. Right? You can't see it. I'll pick another one. There's 10 or 11 of them. A Course in Miracles lists them out. I'll pick another one. Patience.
Open-mindedness.
Open-mindedness.
Tolerance.
That's right.
Tolerance.
Tolerance. Tolerance, yes.
That's a different one.
Yeah. Yes, tolerance is what? Trust, honor, joy, tolerance. What, three or four? There's a spirit of tolerance. There's a spirit of tolerance. It's not deciding what's acceptable and then saying, let me check my list. Yes, I'm tolerant of you being this way. That's not tolerance. That's selective tolerance. That's the ego.
How about, can you be tolerant just on Tuesday?
Yeah, it's so selective. It's so patient for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Mark, I'm going to give you 5 minutes. And I'm going to be really patient for 5 minutes, and then I'm coming
really
after
listen,
you.
But then...
Wait! Wait! That's not a spirit of patience.
No.
That's a contract with punishment. The true spirit of patience is, I want you to do this when you're ready. That would make me happiest. I'll be patient because I really want this to turn out easy. And I'll wait happily. There's a spirit of patience, you see? You see? It's invisible. But there's a spirit of it, and it will navigate our relationship as needed to maintain patience or tolerance.
Patience is what's required, I think, in order to be okay with other people's path.
Tolerance is required and it's okay to be with other people's path. Trust is required to be okay with other people's path.
Yeah.
Open-mindedness is required to be okay with other people's path.
And that had been a hard one for me to learn as a therapist.
It turns out faithfulness is required to stay okay with other people's path.
Generosity
is required of you to be okay with other people's path. Gentleness is required.
Giving up your goals for other people.
If you want them to be them, and not another copy of you kicking and screaming all along the way.
You know that's why I was
The spirit of it. The spirit of it.
So is that being in the right mind? Your mind, so that's the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
Conscious or mindful.
Yes.
Mindful.
Yes.
Versus
right
the ego.
Yes.
Yeah, right-mindedness.
Yes. That's so much a better way to live. Because then that's what you hold yourself to. If you carry the spirit of tolerance wherever you go, you now will expect tolerance and you will be tolerant. And then you can be undefended. It's a whole different way of living in this crazy world. John, what's the reason for keeping your secret?
Oh, I don't know. Make it all real. Make it all real. But.
That's good.
This is a big but. When I learned a long time ago that don't tell people, and this has been reiterated here, don't tell people things they don't need to know.
Yeah.
Don't tell them anything they don't need to know. And one good reason is because, you know, on a deeper level, don't we all know, there are no secrets.
Everybody knows
we're all the Son of God, and on a deeper level, we all know everything about each other.
Yeah.
And we're all part of the sonship.
Yep.
And the secrets are not important because they're just projections of our ego.
Yes.
Just manifestations of what we think we need to keep secret.
Yes, exactly.
And I think, though, having said that, I think that I've also learned in my travels that no matter what happens, I don't care what it is, there's always some good that's going to come of it.
Yeah.
There's always some good that's going to come of it. And it doesn't matter if you have secrets or no secrets.
Yeah.
There's whatever you think is going to be some kind of negative aspect or result from whatever secret you might have, something good will still come of it.
Yep.
It's why you were here, to learn our lessons in such a way.
Yeah.
To understand your own mind and thus progress.
So that is an aspect of trust. Yeah. Big trust. The high level.
You can say that, yeah.
It's good. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay,
turn in the text to page, I think it's late in the 500s. It's 589.
589. The undoing of fear.
The undoing of fear. And the present memory. You see, these secrets you have, they're all of something in the past. Even if you keep it a secret, it's still a little burden on you. Keeping it a secret.
589.
And the little punishment that goes on in your own head sometimes, 589.
In the text or less.
Text.
Yep, in the text, 589.
Oh, okay.
Only place 589 shows up. You can
be
your
special page, right?
You see, isn't it?
Okay.
It's probably highlighted like crazy.
I'm here.
I know. Yeah. You can beat yourself up with this past. You'll recognize how hard the first workbook lessons work after we read this. Let's read a few paragraphs of this. You ready to go, David?
The miracle does nothing. All it does is to undo. And thus, It cancels out the interference to what has been done. It does not add, but it literally takes away. And what it takes away is long since gone. But being kept in memory appears to have immediate effects. This world was over long ago. The thoughts that made it are no longer in the mind that thought of them and loved them for a little while. The miracle but shows the past is gone, and that has truly gone has no effects. Remembering a cause can but produce illusions of its presence, not effects.
That's metaphysics of mind that it's talking about. Each of those sentences is literally true. And it depends on where your consciousness level is of how much you can accept them and hear them and see their truth. Don't try too hard. If you get too much of a headache, just read on, because there's other levels of consciousness to be discussed here. But every one of those sentences is literally true in that paragraph. And the more you study Course in Miracles and you can keep up with listening to the Holy Spirit, they will come alive for you, and they will be gifts to you to help you understand what the beep is going on here. This high, it's a visit. Remember I told you that A Course in Miracles, sometimes Jesus will jump up into higher levels of teaching than any place else in the book. And then they'll come back down and say, all right, let's get back to what you can understand. This is one of those places. He's also covering the obvious, but he jumps way up here. And you can feel it. It's a huge gift. It'll keep you studying again and again, because these gems are in here. All right. Let's continue.
All the effects of guilt are here no more, for guilt is over. In its passing went its consequences, left without a cause. Why would you cling to it in memory if you did not desire its effects? Remembering is as selective as perception, being its past tense.
Oh, did he just say that perception, memory is perception's past tense? Memory is perceiving.
Well, it's selective. It's as selective as perception because of its quality of having being in past tense.
Quality of being perception, which is selective.
I like that.
Isn't that interesting?
It's an interesting sentence. I mean, I think what it's saying is that a memory is it's selective, a way of selectively looking at something, as perception is a selective way of looking at something.
And therefore,
except
arbitrary.
That the memory's in the past.
Right.
And and the perception of something is in the present.
Always.
The perception of a memory is in the
present. Always.
No, a perception is something that's currently.
Always.
Okay. Always? I don't know. Always.
No,
always.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes.
That's
okay.
Why the section is called the present memory.
Oh, okay.
You're right on it, Mark.
Okay.
I'm giving you a pat on the back.
Okay.
Because you're absolutely on it.
I've always thought that I don't have much memory.
Memory is memory is the past tense of perception.
Mm-hmm.
You're selectively picking out. But it's not really in the past, is it?
No. Not if you're so not if you're remembering it right now.
Not if you're remembering it right now. But you don't remember it yesterday.
But it's not the truth. It can't be the truth that we relate to our memories like they're the truth.
Yeah, somehow because
they can't be.
Yeah.
They can't be.
They're true for you.
They can't be because
it's true for you.
Well, yeah, but they can't be true.
You selected it.
They can't be true.
You learn that
because
they can't.
They're mapped onto feelings and
feelings, judgments,
interpretations,
perspectives.
Yeah, and that can't be subjective.
It can't.
They weren't even true when they were happening.
Right.
It wasn't even true when it happened.
Perception is selective too.
Mm-hmm.
So
perception is selective by definition. It, when you perceived it the first time, it was perception, which was selective. You see, a beach ball has three colors, right? Just to say, it's green and yellow and blue. From wherever you are, you can only see two of the three colors. Oh. Say blue and green. The yellow's on the whole other side. You will swear that beach ball is blue and green. Somebody else says, no. That's what everything is.
But isn't that what the whole purpose of saying all the meaning you give to this is what you're doing?
Yep.
Because we never see the same, any one thing the same way anybody else sees it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's why courtroom stuff is ridiculous.
It's really tough. It's really tough. Yes, so please continue.
Okay, it is perception of the past as if it were occurring now and still were there to see. Memory, like perception, is a skill made up by you to take the place of what God gave in your creation.
And I told you that progression away from what was given you in your creation. You selectively perceive yourself as a dreamer, as a figure in a dream, and then as a in a nightmare, so forth. Please continue.
Well, a memory is like a dream.
Yep. Very good. Very good.
And like all the things you made, it can be used to serve another purpose and to be the means for something else. It can be used to heal and not to hurt if you so wish it be.
If you so wish it be. The same things that were made and consistently hurt you will now be used to heal you. Same thing. That's just the kindest way out of the jungle. Let's say you get lost in the jungle. The kindest way is to lead you back the exact same way you got in. And then each time you all recognize that stump, I remember this, I saw that, you will feel comfortable as you go back out. Rather than forcing you beeline to unfamiliar territory, the shortest way out may not be so good, may not be so kind. So the very thing can be changed now, can be used to heal and not to hurt if you so wish it be. And that's what we're going to do with the Course in Miracles. The whole workbook is designed to help you have miracles in your daily life, whatever you got going, however much you have to worry about.
But it's also true that in any one moment, what you're thinking is about the past.
Yes.
So it's always a dream.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a dream.
A bit of perception about what happened.
It turns out that there's no time, even.
Yeah.
That's part of the dream.
Yeah.
Lesson 158. Time is a trick, comma, a sleight of hand. Period. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Whoa! Leave
when
that.
You get to be my age, you will.
It's all in this one book. It's so crazy. Isn't that amazing? We can go on and on and on. And we will. Okay.
who's and next? We are.
Here we are. Okay, Kenny, you up to read?
Well, I've been practicing this thing since
called reading.
The beginning, and I don't understand the first sentence, so I'm going to pass again.
Well, I'm telling you, this is a section that has several levels of teaching in it.
Yeah.
If you can't understand it, that means you probably read it correctly. No insult, but this is some tough stuff.
Foundation.
This is some tough stuff, but man, is it a celebration the more you understand. Well, please go ahead.
Nothing employed for healing represents an effort to do anything at all.
Wow.
So what does that mean?
Wow. Because healing is not doing something, it's undoing the wrong perspective. That's what healing actually is. Healing is not a change at all, it's a change in perspective of what you thought was sick. That's true healing. If that wasn't true, you would need all sorts of ongoing support.
They should replace the Hippocratic Oath with that.
They should. You would need all sorts of specific healing juju for the next possible illness.
saying you don't have to do anything to be healed. You don't have to do anything.
Well, what part of a dream don't you get? You don't have to do anything to fix a dream, since a dream, when you get one step away from it, is actually nothing.
People always have an impulse to try and fix things.
Yes.
That's part naturally of the ego.
Part of the ego.
You still want to fix it.
It's a lot of fun, actually. I have a gas fixing
things. Well, it makes it feel useful.
It's one of my favorite things to do, is fix things.
Fix things.
Yeah. I mean, I just love it.
Yeah.
But if that's a source of my happiness, it's not going to work out so good. That's why I had to go for another, even while I fix things, I have to go for another source of happiness. Hmm. You see, this is a real dream. Dreams are not true. It's just like movies in Hollywood are real. They've got a start, they've got a finish, they've got a title, they've got a box office take, and they've got, you watched them so many times. Say, no, Casablanca. It's a real movie, Casablanca. But there's no Rick character. He's the name of Humphrey Bogart's character. It's called Rick. But there's no Rick. It's not true. It's not true.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
God, that's shattering so many idols for me.
It's not true.
I never liked that movie anyway. I'm glad it's
not. Well, good. Solve that problem. Good news for somebody. But it is a real movie. You can't deny that. And there's a copy of it here and there.
My question is, if we don't have to do anything to heal.
Yes.
Do we even have to remember that what we're not doing?
You must. You must, because you already believe in your sickness.
Okay.
It's all you're thinking about. In fact, your mind is preoccupied with being a body.
So I have to remember that that's a dream.
You do.
Okay, I can't just let that go too.
As it turns out, the only reason that you are dreaming and are seeing yourself as Luann in a body is because you're maintaining your addiction to Luann in a body with every thought.
That makes sense. I mean, that seems true.
You want to see it writ large in the disgusting, precise way that only Jesus can do it? Hold your finger here and turn to page... Oh, yeah. Oh, 552. Only Jesus can tell you the truth like this. Hold your finger on 589. 552. You want to see?
13.
You want to see this? You got it highlighted, right? It's been a while since we've been there.
Been through that part of the jungle before.
Yeah. 552, paragraph 13. Jesus spells it out in disgusting precision. He says, each day and every minute in each day and every instant that each minute holds. Then he puts his finger out from his cloak and touches your chest, tapping it slowly. But relive the single instant when the time of terror took the place of love.
Whoa.
In this nightmare of time that you made up, this is what you do with it. And so you die. And now his eyes go soft as he grabs your shoulders and a little tear forms because he knows how much you're suffering. So you die each day, but to live again until you cross the gap between the past and the present. Then he puts a smile on his face, puts his hands together in gratitude, which is no gap at all. He says, been there, done that. You won't believe it. It's nothing. You've made up time and where you can struggle, and it's nothing. I know it. I'm telling you. I'll write it down for you in this. I'll give you 365 lessons.
But the fact is, I'll just tell you now if you want to hear it, there's no gap at all. The present is now. It's always been now. You've never been out of the present. You think you're burdened by your past? Do you think you're going to be subjected to your future? That's all made up, he says. You're still going to be in the present just like you are now. If you can touch peace now, you can touch peace well now. Right?
Yep.
That's it. That's all of it.
That's why the holy instant is what you want to hold on if you can.
And don't miss them and celebrate them when they come because you touched the truth.
Yeah.
It's really good news. Honestly, it's really good news. And I'll tell you, every once in a while, he just elevates his discussion, like this paragraph. And he says, you know, this pitiful choosing the time of terror again and again and again, such as each life, he says. He says, look, I've been around the world. I'm telling you, through time, such as each life, a seeming interval from birth to death and on to life again. It's a repetition of an instant gone by long ago that cannot be relived. You know, all of time is but the mad belief that what's over, it's still here and now. He busted your whole world, your whole experience, even the parts you haven't lived yet. In this one paragraph, he says, look, this is what's up. I don't know if you're ready for it, but here it is. I told you, once in a while, he just goes a few levels higher, which you really can't hang on to. But they're there. So back to Phage. Thank you, Luann. So, indeed, that's what's going on.
I wrote the last time we went on this. There is no history or future to live.
Good girl. That's your awakening is waiting for you, just right there. So that's why nothing employed for healing represents an effort to do anything at all. He just said, you're not actually fixing something when you heal your mind. You're actually looking at nothing correctly. That's what vision is. But again, it's a brief trip into the beyond for most of us. But not for you. If you're still hanging out in my class and you're doing Course in Miracles your second time through, this is for you. The sooner you get this, the better. And the easier your life will be, the more fun you'll have. So, we'll keep it up.
You had to define fun, please.
Yeah. Well, everything gets worse before it gets better. Does that help? Not really. Oh, how about this one? In the end, it's all good. And if it's not all good, it's not the end yet.
Oh. I like that.
But isn't that how it is?
Some of these like truisms that people use just bug the hell out of me. Like, it is what it is.
Right.
All right. And what if it isn't?
Yeah. Well, if it isn't, and you just think it is.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, we didn't think of that.
It is till it isn't.
Yeah. Well, amen, Esther.
But what you just said is, if it isn't what it is, it's a perception.
Yeah. All right, so we will come back to this page and we'll dig into the other four paragraphs, which is just mind-blowing, another day. For now, let's go to page 436.
In the text,
thank you. And let's do tonight's reading.
Oh, you mean we haven't started that
yet? We haven't started. But I have 10 minutes, I have 7 minutes left. So, I have 6.5 minutes left.
we can keep time, doing the time if you want to.
Well, I try to hold true so people don't miss their favorite TV show at home, I know. You said that I didn't record Game of Thrones season. All right. Sorry.
I haven't watched even one of those.
Okay.
Oh, okay, who's up the bat? Walt, would you read for us paragraph 4?
Love has no darkened temples where mysteries are kept obscure and hidden from the sun.
That's like secrets, right?
It does not seek for power, but for relationships. The body is the ego's chosen weapon for seeking power through relationships. And its relationships must be unholy, for what they are it does not even see. It wants them solely for the offerings on which its idols thrive. The rest it merely throws away, for all that it could offer is seen as valueless. Homeless, the ego seeks as many bodies as it can collect to place its idols in, and so establish them as temples to itself.
Ew. Whoa!
That sounds like exactly what we've been talking about tonight.
Yes. It would preserve and keep secrets to selectively manage an image and establish the situation as a temple to its poor, separate self. Wow. Love, on the other hand, does not keep secrets. Because love starts with wholeness and is always expressing and experiencing and sharing wholeness. That doesn't work in a world of separation of pieces and parts. That's why love is scarce here. But it's part of the reason why you joined this big adventure ride, so you could discover love again. Are you ready? Have you had enough, Bunky? Is it cold enough for you now? You're ready for some heat? I'll bet you it is. I'll bet it is. Yeah. No harm done. A huge party is waiting for you when you return home. You would not believe what I've been through, you'll say. At first you have some doubt that you'll be welcomed home at all after what you've done. These secrets that you're keeping, that you thought were so real. The choices that you've made, that you're ashamed of now. Well, that's the whole story of the prodigal son, remember, in the Bible? The same story is in A Course in Miracles. It says the son has left his home with his big head on his shoulders, and the father said, well, here's your inheritance now. If that's what you want, I mean, there you go. He gets out and just squanders the whole fortune quickly. On nothing. He's nothing to show for it. He's embarrassed. And he's struggling just to stay alive. And he finds himself, he watches some pigs in the street. Somebody threw a cabbage out the window. And the pigs were eating the cabbage. And he thought, God, that's more than I have. He says, my father's pigs back home, the one I ran from and took half of the fortune for myself, those pigs have more than I have now. I will go back and ask my father if I could just be treated. I deserve it. I mean, after all, I see what I did. As one of the pigs. I will go back humbly and ask father if I can just stay in the stable. Because this is rough out here in town. And shamefully, guiltfully, he returns back home to see his father. And embarrassingly face him. Thinking his father will have nothing but disdain for a fool who left everything for nothing. I told you. That's not what he found, is it? This is not how God would treat you. This is not what heaven would be. You're waking up from nothing, a dream. The prodigal son comes home and the father says, you're home, I love it! Welcome! Get him the robes, kill the fatted calf, let's have a feast. My son, who I thought was lost, is home. He thought he was lost, is found. And he's really home now. He wasn't really home before. He was growing apart. Every day he got older, he wandered his mind to the city. But now he's come home where he belongs, with me and with the family. And where his heart is cared for by all of us. And he cared for us. He's home, where he belongs. This is the return
This is the welcome you get. There's nothing that you can do in the city with even half of the fortune that would take you away from your father's eyes as being perfectly lovable. Love has no secrets. There are no thoughts held back from the father to the son at that point. And the son also has no more secrets, does he? He said, I was stripped bare, Dad. I thought I could do better than with the love and the family and the household gave me, but I found out love is where it's at. Family is where it's at. Being where you belong is where it's at. I found it out. I really know it. He knows it better than the other son, who never bothered to stray. The other son says, you never gave me the special robe or killed the fatted calf for me. And the father says, well, because you were lost and found. Isn't that a great short story? The Course does it in one short paragraph. Mm-hmm. Way shorter than what I did, and it's perfectly said. Well, it's Jesus' story.
Do you think then that this dream that we have created, a dream of a dream,
yes,
has a purpose in terms of going back home and recognizing we're home now?
Yes. It did not have a purpose before. It always had a purpose. B.C., before Course, the dream's purpose was separation.
Right.
To allow you to close your eyes on oneness, on God, on love, with a capital L, and on joy, true joy, the true happiness. That was the purpose of this dream, is to get you away from that perfection and possibilities of eternality and joy. Then, as you wake up, you see the nightmare for what it is. That's what's called the real world in this book, is you actually see the world for what it is for the first time. It's like this. Oh, I get it! That's what it's like, pretty much. That fast. That's the real world in this book. That's the real world. And then, because you still have habits of separation, of thinking that you are a separate body, and like I said at the beginning, even if you're beyond the separate body thing, you still think you're a separate soul. Separate soul. You do have a soul. You do have an individualized nature. That's you. But it's not separate. It's too hard to comprehend for one who's grown up so separate, struggling. Survive separate. It's too hard to comprehend, most likely, but it's true nonetheless. It's really good news.
I read a book, and I can't remember, real popular spiritual author, and he was talking, he wrote about the soul, and he said dolphins only have one soul.
What, dolphins?
Dolphins only have one soul, and they're ready to leave this earth.
So now the same dream that was made to separate and does a pretty damn good job is now can be used with the Holy Spirit, which is part of your mind that's connected to the truth. Now the same dream with the same people and the same issues and the same troubles and the same sicknesses and the same differences, that same exact dream is the perfect staircase for you personally to walk back out of the jungle the way you came in. So yes, this dream has a purpose. It always did. It was to hurt, and now it's to heal. Let's have a circle.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good questions. Love it. You really bring it out, you know? You bring it out of me. Bring it out of me. All right, so since there's only this many of us, lean in a little bit and I'll tell you a secret. I mean, as long as nobody else is looking.
This is a secret for my taste.
You're not a body. You're free. No matter what you think has happened since then, in the time that you invented, you're still as God created you. Not as you made yourself. You've made cleverly asleep and done a good job. You've made asleep. And inside this sleep, you've made up dreams with lots of flavors. Very interesting.
in order to keep the dreams interesting, since there was no love there, there was no true sharing, lost. You had to have secrets that were precious and selective and special memories. And these made up the variety of dreams that have become your life and your world. No problem, no sin. Been fun until it wasn't. And then it became nightmares, actually. Some of them started to hurt a little too much. A little too much. So, stop telling yourself the lie that this world is truly your home. Take with you tonight the idea that this is not your true home. You may stay here as long as you like. You may reinvent another one to live in if you like. But somewhere, somehow, deep inside of you, I'm telling you the secret that you know is true and you haven't been willing to admit. This is not your home. You are spirit. Take that with you tonight. Mm-hmm. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you. Amen.
You're welcome. Good job, everybody.